Houston. Very happy Monday to you. It is April the 20th in the year of our Lord 2026. It is Monday of the third week of Easter. Hello to all of you. My name is Wyatt Goolsbee. I'm the executive director of this radio station, KSHJ AM 1430, part of the Guadalupe Radio Network. And you are listening to Catholic Lunch Break. This is the weekly program where we catch up with all things Catholic across the greater Houston area. Here's what's on the program for today. The Office of Vocations here in the Archdiocese is thanking everyone in the greater Houston area for attending and supporting another successful year of the annual Priests versus Seminarians basketball game. The big game last Friday night was one of many events that helps promote holy vocations across our area. Coming up, we'll talk with one of my colleagues, David Magianis, who was on the air for the play-by-play, and he'll talk all about the game. The Miracle of Lourdes right here in Houston. St. Joseph's Catholic Church is hosting a healing mission for young adults starting May the 4th, all aimed at bringing the Lourdes pilgrimage here for those who may have never visited the Marian apparition site in France. And we will talk with Roger Peters about that. He's one of the event's organizers to talk about the goal of the four-night healing mission. Also on the program, the beauty of God's creation. We will talk about the success of the recent Artemis II mission, traveling around the moon and back to Earth. Dr. Robert Provence, he goes by Steve. He's an engineering professor at the University of St. Thomas, and we'll talk with him all about the hard work that goes into a successful mission, and he'll react to one astronaut's Christian message from space. Before all that, though, on today's program, we want to begin, as we always do, with a prayer. So if you join me now in prayer, in the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit, amen. Remember, O most gracious Virgin Mary, that never was it known that anyone who fled to thy protection, implored thy help, or sought thine intercession, was left unaided. Inspired by this confidence, I fly unto thee, O Virgin of virgins, my mother. To thee do I come, before thee I stand, sinful and sorrowful. O Mother of the Word Incarnate, despise not my petitions, but in thy mercy hear and answer me. In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit, amen. Many thanks to all of my colleagues here at KSHJ AM 1430 for all of their hard work on Friday night. As I mentioned before, we at the Guadalupe Radio Network had broadcast the ninth annual Priests versus Seminarians basketball game. With help from our volunteers, Anna and Carol, we also streamed the video of the game to our YouTube page. That's on GRN Online. Look for that keyword there on YouTube, GRN Online. A big thanks to Tim Mott, Jax Morris, David Magianis, and Deacon Patrick Kinnick for all of their hard work as well. It was a pleasure for us to partner with UST Max Studios in the production of the game. Coming up a little bit later in this program, David Magianis will give us his thoughts on the game and his reflection. By the way, the Priest team did fall short this year to the Seminarians game. It was a close and exciting game all the way down to the end. Fullness of Truth is hosting its Summer Catholic Family Conference June the 5th through the 7th. The Catholic Culture Revival 3.0 will be held at the Kalahari Resort and Convention Center in Round Rock, Texas. Conference speakers include Father Chad Ripperger, Kyle Clement, Jennifer Baugh, and Jesse Romero. There will also be a Saturday youth track and lots of family-friendly activities. There's even a comedy show with Catholic convert Shane Smith. Conference registration and hotel information can be found on their website. Go to fullnessoftruth.org. That's fullnessoftruth.org. A big thank you to everyone at St. Mary Magdalene Catholic Church in Humble. The clergy and staff at St. Mary Magdalene welcomed me this past weekend for a visit. I set up a promotional table for the Guadalupe Radio Network in their narthex, getting the word out about our own ministry and making an announcement after the masses. We had a lot of interest from churchgoers who were eager to learn more about our local Catholic radio station. It was also a joy to see their former and current pastors at the same time, Father Felix and Father Robert, respectively. The priests at St. Mary Magdalene in Humble are part of the Missionary Society of St. Paul of Nigeria. So again, many thanks to everyone at St. Mary Magdalene in Humble. My colleague Zach Allen wants to thank Father Paul Felix, the pastor at the Church of the Annunciation in downtown Houston. Zach was there this past weekend with a promotional table himself just outside of the church. The Church of the Annunciation is a staple, of course, in downtown Houston, having been around since 1869. Young adults are invited to a healing mission the week of May the 4th. St. Joseph's Catholic Church in Houston is hosting a four-night mission aimed at bringing the Miracle of Lourdes, France, right here to our area. It takes a lot of volunteers and organizers to put on this kind of event, so we wanted to welcome one of those organizers to the radio station to talk about the power of a healing mission. Joining us on the Guadalupe Radio Network is Roger Peters. Roger and his wife Bernadette go to Mass at St. Joseph's Catholic Church on Kane Street in Houston. He's here talking with us about an upcoming healing mission for young adults that's going to be held at St. Joseph's. Roger, thanks so much for joining us. Welcome into the KSHJ studio. This is your first time here. Glad to have you here.
Well, thank you, Wyatt. It's a pleasure to be here.
I want to ask you all about this upcoming Mission for Young Adults, Miracle of Lourdes, right here in Houston. Of course, people know about Our Lady of Lourdes. They know about Lourdes in France being a place of healing. For people who can't make the trip all the way to Lourdes, you guys are doing something special here in Houston, this healing mission that is happening the week of May the 4th. Give me some context on this. When did this come about? When this idea kind of start to happen about doing something that's Lourdes-related here in Houston?
Yeah, well, Lourdes has a big place in Paradise Estay. So Bernadette and I are with Paradise Estay. We're missionaries to the family. We've been doing that since the inception of that movement within Paradise Estay. And so, I mean, Steve Ballman, our founder, felt the call to found Paradise Estay at Lourdes. So Lourdes has been a very important part of the spirituality of Paradise Estay since the very beginning. And then recently, we realized that there's so much hurt and woundedness in the world. Mm-hmm. And that there's a tremendous need for healing, and that Lourdes is a place of physical and spiritual healing. And so the idea then was to, many people can't travel to France, so how do we bring Lourdes to different places? So last April, we brought Lourdes to St. Philip the Apostle Parish in Corpus Christi and did the mission there. And now we're doing it here at St. Joseph Parish in Houston for young adults. So basically, we do all the things that's done at Lourdes. There's probably four prominent things that are done at Lourdes. One is to drink the water. The second thing is to bathe. And we can't do that, but we'll have towelettes soaked, and we do it with actual Lourdes water. We'll have towelettes soaked in Lourdes water so you can bathe like you might do at Lourdes.
I just want to reiterate that. So you guys have Lourdes water here.
Yeah, we have Lourdes water. We have to buy it and ship it from France. And every night there's a Eucharistic procession where it's healing. It's basically touch the cloak, like the hemorrhaging woman did, touching the cloak and was healed. It's the opportunity to be healed by Jesus and through the intercession of Our Lady. And then the last night is every night there's a candlelit rosary procession at night in Lourdes, and we'll do that the last night. We'll parade around the streets around St. Joseph. So basically doing all the things we do at Lourdes under the intercession and presence of Our Lady. And, you know, we basically bring Lourdes to the parish and invite people to come and then let God do all the work once they come. So our role is very small in the sense of just providing the environment, and then we let Our Lady and Jesus and God do all the work.
Yeah, that's pretty amazing. You had mentioned Paradise Estay. I want to give credit to so much of the work that they do. Of course, they do nationwide work that promotes the family and, of course, our Catholic values. But they're based right here in Houston. So you had mentioned Steve Ballman, you know, the founder. And he's, like you mentioned, he's going to be giving talks and stuff during this week of May the 4th for the healing mission. But you had mentioned that you and Bernadette, your wife, are missionaries to the family. Roger, unpack that a little bit more for me. Tell me what that program is and what its intent is.
Yeah, so it's a way of life, really, for us. So we become missionaries to the family. You know, the future of the world passes by way of the family. You know, St. John Paul II said that. And we know that the final battle between good and evil is based on the family. And we've seen a lot happen to the family over the past 50 years. And so we wanted to form couples. It's a one-year formation that we do at Notre Dame. Also with some program from Paradise Estay. And we basically, our charism is to live the spirit of Nazareth in our home. The home that Jesus, Mary, and Joseph lived in is the perfect home. You know, the two greatest saints are a mother and a father. And so we try to understand how to live that. God is found in the home. And so we are trained and formed, and then we go out and invite people to come and see. We live this within our homes. And many people do home programs, have people come in and see their homes and their children. And we do other things where you can evangelize anywhere. You can be in the grocery store and somebody can see a happily married couple and it's come and see. So that's basically what we do. We're up to over 200 couples now throughout the world. The seventh class of missionaries to the family will be commissioned this summer. And just tremendous things are being done through all of us.
Why did you and your wife, Bernadette, want to participate in something like that? Why is it important for you guys?
Yeah, we could see what was happening with the family. The family's under attack. We could see what was happening around us, and it just captured us. And we just felt a strong calling. And then Steve had a similar idea to start missionaries to the family. And so we were in contact with him, and we were fortunate enough to be part of the first class starting in 2019. Mm-hmm. And it's just something that, as I moved into retirement, we also wanted to find something to do together as a couple. We had, I'd been so busy at work all those years, and we wanted to kind of, reconvene together as a couple and do something that way. And this was the perfect thing for us, and it has been. We've received so much fruit from doing it, and so we kind of felt called to it.
Yeah, I would think that kind of giving of yourself, you and your wife, your time, focus, energy, can really, I guess, is the right term joy? Is there a certain joy in doing that?
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a joy because you make spiritual friends. One of the big elements of this is making spiritual friendships, getting to know people, spending time with them, and sharing our lives. We all have our ups and our downs, our joys and our sorrows, and we can share that together and do it in the context of our faith.
Yeah. I had mentioned that you and your wife, again, go to Mass at St. Joseph, your parishioners there on Kane Street in Houston. And before that, you guys had gone to Mass at St. Lawrence in Sugar Land, mm-hmm. Before pandemic, before 2021. Tell me, though, about kind of your own spiritual growth in doing all this, Roger, participating in everything like this, because you didn't grow up Catholic. You didn't even necessarily grow up going to church on a regular basis, like every Sunday. Tell me a little about your own faith journey.
Yeah. Yeah, I was raised, the closest Protestant church to our house growing up in Cleveland was a Presbyterian church, and a lot of the guys that I went to elementary school went there. So my mom and dad would drop me off to Sunday school, and that was pretty much it. And mm-hmm. and then the way they did it, you joined the church in the ninth grade, and so that's when I was baptized at 14.
Okay.
And then from then, I was kind of unaffiliated for another 10 years. I met Bernadette when I was 24, mm-hmm. and she was a cradle Catholic, and we started to go to Mass, occasionally, mm-hmm. and she was very patient with me, which is something that I'm, forever grateful for. We were married a couple years after that and had a couple of children. And then I realized, she was very patient with me, but I just realized it was time to unify the family, mm-hmm. to have us all on the same page with the Catholic faith and to give that gift to our children. So I think 33, 34 years old, I went through RCIA in Sugar Land. Bernadette was able to be my sponsor, which... Mm-hmm. as my wife, which I don't think you can do today, but she was my sponsor, and it was a great year. And so I was brought into to confirmation and full communion with the church at St. Lawrence. And what's really triggered things after that, I was able to join. Bernadette also encouraged me very much to join the pastoral council. So okay. I'm concerned for that. And that really was a turning point for me, I think, in 2015. I got very involved with St. Lawrence, and then more involved with Paradisus Day. And then and things just kind of progressed from there as we got into missionaries to the family.
I'm sure you found, as so much of us who are Catholic have found, there's so much richness to 2,000 years of church tradition that it feels like you're always learning something. There's always a way to grow in your faith.
Yeah, I think, it's funny. You can hear the same scriptures over and over again, mm-hmm. but there's always something new. There's so many details. There's just so many ideas in, three or four sentences mm-hmm. that each time you read it, something different will speak out to you.
Yeah. Well, you had mentioned about the importance of the family. I just want to wish many blessings on you and your wife because y'all have been married now almost four decades, 39 years. So God bless. Like I said, that's something that seems almost like a rarity in this day and age to be able to have that kind of commitment. So like you were saying, though, the goal, of course, with this Missionaries of Family in Paradisus Day is to build that up, and it's definitely needed in this society. So do you anticipate then that there are going to be couples who are attending this upcoming healing mission for Lourdes?
Yeah, so at St. Joseph Parish, we're very blessed. We have 9 missionary to the family couples.
Okay.
At St. Joseph. And so all 9 of us will be present at the mission all 4 nights. So we're going to be working it primarily as prayer ambassadors. So what we do to administer the Lourdes experience, we'll have mm-hmm. little tables with the Lourdes water for drinking mm-hmm. or the towelettes to wash with. And we have the opportunity to pray over the people. As they come up for that experience. And sometimes it's quick. We just kind of have a simple prayer. And other times people will come up and there's a lot on their mind. Mm-hmm. And so those cases are not as prominent, but you know, we have to be prepared for everything. And so we're very blessed to have all our 9 couples. We have other couples coming as well. We have 15 couples that will be prayer ambassadors to help administer the experiences. And those are mostly missionaries to the family couples.
I want to mention, before I forget, a shout-out to everybody at St. Joseph's, because we have so many friends of the radio station there. Father Victor Perez mm-hmm. is great. We've had Father Victor here on the radio and other parishioners as well there. So we always love having folks from St. Joseph come here to the radio station. So that's great that they're willing to host you guys for that week, for 4 nights in particular. Again, this is starting May the 4th. So I noticed that this is a healing mission that's coming up for young adults in particular. Why young adults? Why that group?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think, you know, Bernadette and I have been for 5 years doing the young adult Bible study with Father Victor over uh-huh. at St. Joseph Parish. And we've seen, you know, lots of young adults come in and come through. Many of them have gone off to other things, are married now and have children from when we started. So it's great to see, you know, their progression through life. But I think there's just a sense that, you know, some things are different today. You know, people are seeking a spouse. They're seeking family life. And I think it's taking longer in many cases today than it did, like when we were getting married, and even our, you know, our parents as well. Mm-hmm. So there's some suffering there, I think, with kind of getting into their family life. Obviously, some things are difficult today, buying a house and some other things than it used to be. So there's some unique conditions today in the culture and times that we think are causing some suffering for the young adults, and it just gives them an opportunity to come in and just be loved, be loved by Our Lady, be loved by Jesus, and people there that are going to be entirely focused on them. I mean, we you know, leave everything behind as we come in to help with this mission, and we're entirely focused on the person in front of us.
Yeah, very good. Well, we're going to encourage people to come. Registration is not required, and like I mentioned, this is going to be 4 nights, May the 4th through May the 7th, and it's going to be in the evening so young adults can come. It starts at 6:30 in the evening, so if they can come after work, they can do so. And it's going to be something, so it's a different speaker every night, right?
No, it's Steve.
Oh, Steve, okay.
Right, so we'll have, you know, the same lineup every night. We have an MC, mm-hmm. Who's one of our parodies today. Mike DiCasolo will be our master of ceremony, and then we'll have a short talk before Steve, but he's the main event each night. And he has, you know, a very compelling story of his own personal life that he'll be telling each of those nights, to kind of correspond to the story of St. Bernadette Subaru,
yes,
who was, you know, of course, called by Our Lady in Lourdes in 1858. So it's a great, and it's compact. It's an hour of all that program, okay, and then we move into the Lourdes experience. So 6:30 to 7:30, we'll have the speaking, and then we move into whether it's the drinking, the washing, the Eucharistic procession, and so forth. So we try to be compact with the night because we know each one of those nights is a work night.
Yes, very good. Excellent. Does all this, Roger, I have to ask, does all of this talking about Lourdes, the miracle of Lourdes, you know, Our Lady, does it make you want to go visit Lourdes more and more?
Yeah, it does. Bernadette and I have been wanting to visit Lourdes for a while.
Uh-huh.
It's kind of interesting. So I married a Bernadette, and mm-hmm. my birthday is December 8th, which is the Immaculate Conception. And, of course, Our Lady said to Bernadette, I am the Immaculate Conception at Lourdes.
Mm-hmm.
So there's an interesting connection there. We hope to get there this summer. We'll see how things turn out, but it's a strong desire that we have to visit Lourdes.
Yeah, I would think so. And I know a lot of people want to go, but, you know, it's expensive. There's a lot of people with physical disabilities or other ailments that would like to go. And so I know there's some groups here in Houston that do that. But, you know, like I said, if this is great that if people can't necessarily go there, especially for young adults who have a very busy schedule, mm-hmm. they'll be able to go and to participate with this. So very good. So I want to ask you, Roger, as we're wrapping things up and reminding people that this is coming up very quickly, the week of May 4th, I did want to ask you, as a convert to the Catholic faith, if you have any favorite saints yourself. You've mentioned St. Bernadette, but if you have any favorite saints or favorite prayers, special devotions, things that just are meaningful to you.
Yeah, certainly St. Joseph is big for us mm-hmm. In Paradisus Day, and you know, for us as men, to be husbands and to be fathers. So I pray to St. Joseph. One thing that Bernadette and I started doing 6, 7, 8 years ago, we had been told by some friends of ours who had some troubles going on in their family with some of their children, just pray the rosary every day for 365 days straight. Mm-hmm. Just do it for a year. And I had not been a rosary prayer at all.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I had to walk around with a book and the dog sometimes and learn the prayers. But Bernadette and I did it for 365 days, and the particular issues that were going on, we saw them, not maybe completely solved, but we saw changes. So it really revealed to us the power of the rosary. And so we've been pretty devoted to the rosary since then.
Yeah, a good reminder to stay consistent with it.
Yeah. You know,
not just necessarily a one-time prayer, but if you're able to pray it like that every day, that is powerful. That's amazing. So that's great. So we'll remind people then to pray the rosary. And yeah, no shame in that. If people haven't prayed the rosary in a while, look it up. You know, people now look it up on their phone as to how to pray the rosary.
Yeah, absolutely.
And all the prayers are there. It makes it easy, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's handy to memorize the prayers because, you know, anytime you're anywhere, I can just, you know, start praying the rosary in the car, you know, in the park. You know, if I don't necessarily have something with me, but initially I had to walk around with my book and learn.
Well, if somebody tries it for 365 days, hopefully they'll have the prayers pretty well down.
Eventually they sink in.
Yeah, very good, excellent. So, well, we'll be praying for the work that everybody who's part of the missionaries to the family are doing, the work that's going on with Paradisus Day, and of course praying for the young adults who are going to be either attending this particular healing mission or are considering attending this healing mission here in Houston. A reminder, this is open to everyone who wants to come and to participate in that. Again, this is 4 nights, Miracle of Lourdes Healing Mission, 6:30. Again, 4 nights, May the 4th through the 7th. Again, Roger, credit to you and Bernadette. Before I go, I want to give one shout out. We're talking about family. You have 2 sons?
And a daughter.
Mm-hmm. Give me their names so we can give them a shout out on the air.
Okay, so our sons are Jason and Justin, and our daughter is Christy.
Very good. And are they here in the Houston area? Or?
Justin and Christy are in the Houston area. They both were recently married in the past year.
Okay.
And our son Jason and his family live in Kansas City.
Okay, very good. Well, God bless them all. God bless everybody who's listening to this and who share your goal, your wife's goal, family's goal of building up the family in our society. Roger Peters, again, parishioner, St. Joseph's Catholic Church on Kane Street in Houston. Thanks so much for being here. We really appreciate it.
Thank you, Wyatt. It's been a pleasure.
We are going to take a quick break, but when we come back, we will talk about the beauty of God's creation from space. Dr. Province, an engineering professor at UST, will reflect on the recent success of the Artemis II mission around the moon. Stay with us. You're listening to Catholic Lunch Break on AM 1430.
Even if you believe God has a plan for your future, it can be challenging to figure it out. Most people experience uncertainty, doubt, fear when searching for their vocation. Hi, my name is Father Richard McNeely, and I'm the Vocations Director for the Archdiocese of Galveston, Houston. I want to help you hear God's voice and discern God's will for your life. Contact me at HoustonVocations.com for spiritual direction and guidance as you discern your vocation in life. Again, visit HoustonVocations.com and get in contact with God.
Southeast Houston Cardiology is a proud sponsor of the Guadalupe Radio Network and enjoys great programming such as The Doctor Is In with Dr. Ray Guarindi. Southeast Houston Cardiology has been serving patients with heart disease and vascular disease with up-to-date care. Southeast Houston Cardiology has 2 locations, Webster and Pasadena. You can contact them online at southeasthoustoncardiology.com or 281-338-4004.
You want more priests? Because this is how you get more priests. Join the Sarah Club. Hi, I'm Candace Terrell, Governor of District 10 of the Sarah Club International. The mission of the Sarah Club is simply to encourage more people to discern a vocation to the priesthood or to the religious life. You can help. To learn more about joining the Sarah Club, visit Sarah10.com. That's Sarah10.com.
Hello, Houston. This is Joel Matthews of Turlington & Matthews, located in Katy, Texas. We are proud to support this local Catholic radio station, KSHJ AM 1430. As certified public accountants, our firm serves our clients with dedication by following three underlying principles: professionalism, responsiveness, and quality. And we serve the entire greater Houston area. Our website is www.tmcpafirm.com. That's www.tmcpafirm.com. May God bless you.
Welcome back to Catholic Lunch Break, the weekly program where we catch up with all things Catholic in the greater Houston area. This is Wyatt Goolsbee, executive director of this radio station. Those with a love for science are celebrating the recent success of the Artemis II mission. Artemis II was a crewed lunar flyby mission a little over a week ago. It was the first crewed flight of the NASA-led Artemis program and the first crewed flight beyond low Earth orbit since Apollo 17 in 1972. Photos and video from space have also led to a lot of conversation about the beauty of God's creation. One professor at the University of St. Thomas used to work at the Johnson Space Center and is familiar with some of the technology used on the Artemis II. Joining us on the Guadalupe Radio Network with more reaction to the success of the Artemis II mission is Dr. Robert Provence, also known as Steve. He's the Associate Professor of Physics and Engineering at the University of St. Thomas. Steve also spent more than two decades as an engineer at NASA's Johnson Space Center. Steve, thanks so much for coming in here to the KSHJ studio. Nice to have you here.
Well, thank you, Wyatt. I appreciate it.
I want to talk to you all about the Artemis II mission going around the moon and absolutely incredible on this 9-plus-day mission and get your reaction as an engineer to all of this. But first, let's talk about the University of St. Thomas, where you are now an associate professor. This is a new thing for you. You just came on board at the university in January of this year. As I mentioned, you were at NASA for so long. I imagine the last several months have just been a whirlwind for you. Describe what's been going on trying to make an adjustment to being an associate professor at UST.
Oh, my gosh. So I left NASA January 2nd. I started at St. Thomas on January 5th.
Just 3 days later.
That's just how I do things, yeah. So I came in having never worked at a university full-time, not knowing the culture. I wanted to come in, blend in, but also bring my energy that I had from NASA into the program. I didn't know what I didn't know. There is a lot that goes on at a university, and it has been trying to get a drink of water from a fire hose the last 90 days or so.
There's so much to learn, so much to do, and I know you have your own aspirations, to try to build out sort of the Department of Physics and Engineering and have more opportunities for students.
Yep, absolutely.
And I want to reiterate that because many people may know the University of St. Thomas for their theology classes, for a number of different programs, but it's good just to reiterate that there is a Department of Physics and Engineering. I'm guessing for you it's been kind of exciting, though, to be on board with that at a university that's growing and a lot of opportunities for growth.
Oh, absolutely. I wish I could stay awake all night and just work on my problems, my projects 24/7. But I come home in the evenings, I work a little bit, and then I'm going to sleep. But as soon as I wake up in the morning, my eyes are open wide and bright, and I am just hitting the road again. Well, I'm trying to do great things up there.
Very good. So tell me a little bit about, I want to get your reaction to NASA's Artemis II mission, because it was in the headlines for so long. Again, 9-plus-day mission, and basically we had astronauts kind of doing a relay race, going around the moon and coming back. For people who may not realize the significance of that, what was the goal of the Artemis II mission? Why is it significant that we have astronauts going around the moon and coming back?
Yeah, this is our opportunity to learn. We did this in the early 70s and haven't done it since. Well, you can't necessarily pick up what you were doing 55, 60 years ago and still be proficient at it. And we have humans in the loop. We've got astronauts out there. So we've got to take baby steps. Artemis 1 was uncrewed. Artemis 2 is crewed. Artemis 3 will build on the success of Artemis 2. And eventually, about Artemis 4 or 5, things are in flux right now, we're going to end up with a permanent habitation or permanent base on the moon. But you have to take those steps, one small step at a time. And eventually you make some really good progress. So Artemis II, we shot to the moon, and it's actually really fascinating. And I had the opportunity to work on the trajectory for a while there at JSC. They led the moon. So they were flying out there to arrive with the moon. They actually weren't aiming at the moon. They were aiming ahead of it.
Okay.
So they actually got to the point ahead of the moon, the point where they were interacting with the moon. They were in front of it. They led the moon. As the moon passed by them, the gravity of the moon actually pulled them back and guided them back to the Earth.
Okay.
Very clever.
Almost kind of like a slingshot where you're kind of going around?
Absolutely, okay. Yeah. In front. So you actually came around in front. As the moon passed by, it pulled it back, pulled Artemis back down and back towards the Earth.
Yeah. You had mentioned before that we're always learning, we're always trying to improve and build on kind of the technology here with the rockets. I guess that makes sense for you as an engineer. You're always trying to get better and improve and build on stuff. For those of us who may not understand engineering, that could be almost frustrating. We're like, hey, why can't we do it faster? Why can't we improve? You know, it's been decades now. Why haven't we perfected the rocket? Why is that sort of a silly way to think about it? Because we're always trying to get better, right?
Oh, absolutely. And it really comes down to two things. The first one is space is hard.
There you go. That's good. Space is hard.
And we can't simulate it all together in one single room, one single body here on the Earth. Oh, we have vacuum chambers where you can see what happens when you have no air around you. We also have the KC-135, the Vomit Comet, that's so famous. And you can experience what it's like to be in zero-G or micro-G environment. But we don't have them both combined. Mm-hmm. We also don't have, you know, a lack of atmosphere all the way to the sun. So to understand exactly how the radiation is going to interact with your hardware, we don't know that. So there are these layers, these problems that we can study, we can evaluate independently, but to put them all together, you've got to go to space to do that. Mm-hmm. So every single time we go to space, we learn something new, and it's a building block. Okay, we put that knowledge in the library, and the next version, the next system that we develop, we use that knowledge, and so it's been in this iterative process. And I know it's slow. I want it to be faster. I want us to have colonized, you know, the moons around Jupiter at this point. Uh-huh. It's just not feasible to do that in any safe manner.
Yeah.
And the way NASA is doing it is just about the smartest, the best, the brightest minds. This is their approach.
Yeah.
So you have to trust it.
Absolutely. And of course, we value the life of all of our astronauts, people that go into space. So I know they're always so careful about doing everything we can, especially during those manned missions to protect everybody who's in space. You had mentioned that when you were at NASA's Johnson Space Center, that you had worked on some of the technology that they've used on the Artemis II. I was looking at my notes about that. Tell me about the launch abort system.
Okay, certainly. So the launch abort system is an overall, think of it as your lifeboat for the capsule. Mm-hmm. It will work to save the astronauts' lives if something catastrophic happens during launch.
Okay.
So it only functions from the time the rocket is sitting there on the launch pad and just before they are injected into orbit, I think at 300,000 feet, they actually jettison the launch abort vehicle.
Okay.
So, but at any point in time, and it's about a 5-minute flight, the rocket, something happens, something catastrophic happens, and we've seen it happen before, and the rocket explodes.
Mm-hmm.
The launch abort system senses this catastrophic event, fires exploding bolts, ignites its own independent engines, and pulls the astronauts away from this exploding rocket as fast as humanly possible.
Mm-hmm.
We did the analysis. We really want, you know, you want to keep them safe, but you want them to get away from the exploding device as quickly as possible. And so we had to thread that needle. Move as fast as you can without harming them, but get them away. So it happens just almost instantaneously. The bolts fire, the engines ignite, and it takes off.
Yeah. And this launch abort system seems so relevant because you're right. There are so many examples of when we've launched a rocket and not everything has gone to plan.
That's right.
So having that there is so important. One of the other projects you had worked on was the spacecraft optical kind of laser communication system, which is used to transmit video and data from near the moon back to the Earth.
That's right. Yep.
That sounds incredible. How does that work?
So
not exactly Wi-Fi.
but it's real similar. So we can draw a comparison here. The whole reason we have this optical comm system is for the same reason here on Earth. We use Wi-Fi. Uh-huh. Unless you want a really reliable connection, then you get a wired connection.
Yeah.
If you want a really reliable connection that's really fast, you pull out the wired connection and you put in optical. You put in your fiber optics.
Right.
This is essentially a fiber optic line from your capsule back to the Earth. We just disconnected the fiber. So it is a laser communication system from the vehicle back down to the surface of the Earth.
Okay, very good.
It gives them fast data. And when I say fast, I'm talking they could stream 4K from beyond beyond the moon.
So oh, wow.
Deeper than the moon, they're still streaming us 4K data. Now, this was its first flight on an Artemis vehicle. And it performed, again, I'm outside the gate. I would know intimately how well it performed were I still inside the gate. Uh-huh. But being outside, I'm only consuming what you guys can see. But it looks like it did real well.
Yeah.
Probably 85 to 90%, maybe even 95% success.
Yeah. That seems like that would also be really useful in emergencies. As soon as you're trying to transmit data, if something happens, you're saying, look, this is what's going on. This is what we're seeing.
One of these days, probably. So at this point, it is just an experimental project. Uh-huh. So there are only two locations on the surface of the Earth it could beam its information back to.
Okay.
So if you had an emergency, it would have to be an emergency that still allowed you to dynamically point your laser from the capsule back down to the Earth.
Okay.
So there's a little bit of issue there for this version.
Okay, very good.
But it seems to have worked real well. Listening to the NASA administrators, they liked what they saw.
So just to reiterate that kind of laser communication system, the idea is to what transmit, is it like video data for like research purposes, like what their information they're gathering?
That's where it will go. This was that experimental thing. They sent the video we saw, mm-hmm. when you had the astronauts talking to each other, that was actually traveling through the optical comm.
Oh, wow. That's incredible. Yeah. And like I said, everything builds on each other. So getting out there and being able to actually experiment with it in space is incredible. Like I said, it seems to have worked pretty well because some of it was seemed pretty impressive from our perspective back down here on the Earth. So taking a lot of what you did when you were working at NASA Johnson Space Center, Steve, and now that you're at the University of St. Thomas teaching physics and engineering, I know your specialty in particular is electrical engineering. One of the goals that you've been thinking about since you joined UST several months ago is to try to teach some of the students aspects of what you learned as an engineer at NASA. What, thinking about future, what do you want to instill? What do you want to create and build there?
Well, I have an unusual specialty. I am an electrical engineer, but I always design and develop systems for space. I want to take that knowledge and bring it to the classroom there at UST. So that the students that are graduating from UST as electrical engineers, my students, can take that resume and go out to NASA and immediately be productive contributors to the space program. One of the reasons I actually ended up leaving NASA to come to UST is because I wanted to contribute more than just that lone engineer's work on projects.
Mm-hmm.
This is going to provide me that opportunity to send, you know, over the decades, and my goal is to teach at the University of St. Thomas as long as I worked out at Johnson Space Center.
Okay.
So I am beginning my second career. Over those decades, I hope to send hundreds of students out there with the background, with the understanding that is fundamental, that is necessary for JSC. I want them to walk through the door already knowing that stuff. So yeah. That they're not going to spend 2 years learning what it took me. They can come in and already know, be aware of it, and grow their careers much quicker and be very productive and help the program.
And it seems so relevant for the University of St. Thomas because we're right here in the heart of Houston, and there's a lot of interest in people who have background in engineering to probably want to work for Johnson Space Center or learn more about engineering, and all that stuff. So it makes sense. You're in the heart of it and likely will be able to pull from students who are interested in that.
Absolutely. And even if you come to the University of St. Thomas and you're one of my students and I'm teaching about the trials and tribulations of designing for space and you don't have that interest, you can still learn what it's like to design for harsh environments and mm-hmm. then apply that to subseas if you want to go into oil and gas, apply that to other environments that are not quite as challenging but close to it.
Yeah, very good. I know that for a lot of us thinking about the universe can be kind of incredible at first. When I was reading about the Artemis II crew, one of the crew members, Victor Glover, is a devout Christian, and he had thanked God for his recent experience in space. So I want to get your reaction to this, Steve. I want to read a quote here from Victor Glover and just see what you think about it. He was saying, quote, "When this started, I wanted to thank God in public, and I want to thank God again because even bigger than my challenge trying to describe what we went through, the gratitude of seeing what we saw, doing what we did, and being with who I was with, it's too big to just be in one body." And so he had also made some observations, of course, just being in Artemis II and looking at the Earth from the moon or from space. Your reaction to all of that?
Oh, gosh, I completely agree with what he said. Trying to put myself into his shoes or into his space boots, and looking back at the Earth, this one lone planet in this vast universe that we know of, that is our home, that is habitable for humans. That this is it. All of our studies, we stare out into the cosmos, and so far we've not found anything staring back at us. The known universe, we're the only things there. Mm-hmm. The miracle that had to put, you know, everything that goes into this Earth, the atmosphere, the environment, the water, the oceans, all of that into this one beautiful blue marble, perfectly positioned, perfectly aligned, circling or orbiting our sun. Easiest way to convert someone, take an atheist and put them in space. I don't know how you could look at the miracle, not only looking back at the Earth, but just looking out into space and not just feel the profound depth of the cosmos.
Yeah, it is absolutely incredible to think about. And there's so much that we don't know. There's so much that we're still learning about the universe. We've heard, we've learned the universe is expanding, but there's so much beyond our sight that we can see. So hopefully we'll be able to continue to learn more. And like I said, it's kind of taking baby steps, like you were talking about before, just learning more about how space works, what we can learn about the moon, just taking everything one step at a time.
Oh, yeah, it's so exciting.
Yeah.
You can just look at any star, any body in the sky, and spend your lifetime studying just that one single body.
Mm-hmm.
And not be complete at the end of it.
Yeah, very good. So I want to go back and then just ask you then one more thing, Steve, about, again, joining the University of St. Thomas, again, in their Department of Physics and Engineering as an associate professor. Tell me a little bit about why you think the University of St. Thomas was a good fit for you. What was it about the university, maybe being able to have a good relationship with the students? What do you think that attracted you to join?
So on a very personal level, I'm not a native Houstonian. I've been here a while, but I first showed up inside the city limits in the spring of 1991.
Mm-hmm.
I fell in love with the city. But in falling in love with the city, it started right there on Montrose and Alabama and Richmond. That area is what was the city of Houston for me for the longest time. And that's exactly where the University of St. Thomas is. That never went away. So when I decided it was time to make a change, I didn't really want to leave the city of Houston. I kept getting drawn back to the University of St. Thomas. It's always been that pull. I felt that pull. That's, I think, the best way I can describe it. I felt that pull back to the city that I knew in 1991, right there at the University of St. Thomas. And it just so happens when I'm feeling this calling, feeling this pull, over the summer, there was a position open.
Was it listed specifically as like an engineering?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah. At that time, there had been some transitions. You probably have heard of the changes within the federal government. There had been some transitions, some changes there at Johnson Space Center. And I was given every research project I ever wanted. And I went, okay, fine. This isn't the time. I'm staying at JSC. I'm happy with what I'm doing. I'm just going to stay here. And we will put that on the back burner for another 5 years. And then it just kept pulling and calling to me and calling to me. And then we had the shutdown. So I had 45 days. I'm still going to work, just going to work unpaid. But then it gave me time to think. And I looked, and that position was still available. And so now you're talking mid-October, and I went, I just can't let it pass. I just felt that pull. And I made contact, and they were still looking. I formally applied. It was a near-perfect alignment. They were happy with me. I was in love with the department. And within just a few weeks of the initial discussions, it happened.
I was going to say, that's really fast. UST got right back to you and said, take
yes,
a look.
And that is not how academia works at all. It's usually 9 months to 18 months before you get one of those positions. It was a miracle. Everything aligned just to perfection. It was 3 weeks of conversations in Zoom meetings. And we both sides had agreed.
Yeah.
And that the JSC at the time was still shut down. I had no one to tell. The way the furlough worked, the technical folks were still working. Management, HR, they were not.
Yeah, hard to put in a 2-week notice.
So I sat there and waited. Yeah. I was like, I have nobody to tell. So when everybody finally came back, I waited a week because I felt it would be really ugly to tell my supervisor, who I have a long-standing friendship with, hey, man, I'm sorry, I'm leaving. So I gave him a week to check his email and to get everything.
Terribly nice of you.
I wanted to negotiate and get out of there as correctly as possible, but time just got shorter and shorter. And so what I normally would have given, 6 months or the minimum 90 days, it still bothers me. I ended up giving him about 3 weeks.
Okay. Okay.
It wasn't me. It was just the circumstances.
Right. But it all happened very quickly. Yeah. Being hired and stuff like that. One of the benefits that a lot of people like about the University of St. Thomas, that it's not humongous class sizes.
Oh, absolutely.
I'm guessing for you, one of the benefits as you're kind of making this transition is that you're going to get to know your students, you know, on an individual basis, which will really help in understanding what they like, what they want to study, what they want to learn in all aspects of physics or engineering.
Oh, absolutely. In fact, my class yesterday, so I'm teaching every morning I have a class. Yesterday, I was teaching my electrical power systems class.
Mm-hmm.
I decided on my walk in, I was like, I'm tired of lecturing with just abstract thoughts. So I get to class. I tell all the students we're taking a field trip. So spontaneously, we got up, we walked around the University of St. Thomas, and I pointed out how the power distribution through St. Thomas worked. There's your transformer, your primary power comes in, you get to distribute it. And so I got to talk to them and walk the campus and point out electrical power system distribution throughout the entire campus. I can only do things like that with small classes.
Uh-huh.
I couldn't take 50 students out there and do that. Half of them wouldn't hear me. They wouldn't know what was going on. But with a smaller group, it was perfect. And that was a hands-on experience that you can't get at a larger university.
Yeah, very good. I love that story. That's so great. They get out there and physically see, you know, what you're talking about. So fantastic. Well, we'll encourage our listeners, our viewers via video, to continue to pray for you, for the students, and all the work that you're doing at the University of St. Thomas, that, you know, again, the Department of Physics and Engineering there continues to build. That you're able to, as you get used to everything, to eventually build out sort of a space engineering, you know, program that people can learn more about the work that you've done. So it's absolutely incredible, and I appreciate your insight also into the Artemis II. I love the way you summarize it, Steve, just saying space is hard. We're still learning about it. We're going to continue learning about it. Baby steps, but I think you will get there, as you were predicting before about eventually having a colony on the moon. It's going to take us a little while.
It's coming.
Yeah. Definitely. Okay, very good. Well, again, if people want to learn more, I also urge people to check out the website for the University of St. Thomas. And again, in particular, Department of Physics and Engineering. Again, so often we talk about the number of different programs that the UST has. So it's good that we remind people that there is a Department of Physics and Engineering, especially here in Houston, where we have a lot of people who are interested in that particular kind of thing. So the website, again, people can check out the University of St. Thomas. It's stom.edu, or you can look up the University of St. Thomas, Houston. Again, Steve, Dr. Robert Provence, Associate Professor of Physics and Engineering at the University of St. Thomas, thanks so much for coming in. I know you've got a busy schedule getting used to everything, so we appreciate your time and being here at the KSHA studio.
Oh, it's been a pleasure. Thank you so much, Wyatt.
Coming up after the break, we recap the Priest versus Seminarians basketball game. My colleague David Magianis will give us his impressions after having helped call the game live on our broadcast. Stay with us. You're listening to Catholic Lunch Break on AM 1430.
You're invited to the annual Spring Festival at St. Rose of Lima in Houston. A full day of family-friendly activities is in store for Sunday, May 3rd. The Fiesta is slated for 11 a.m. to 6 p.m. and includes live music, bingo, children's games, and, of course, lots of food. If you've never visited St. Rose of Lima, we hope you'll stop by and celebrate with the parish community and their pastor, Father Jacob Ramirez. Details on the Spring Festival is on their website, stroselima.org. That's stroselima.org. See you on Sunday, May 3rd.
Deacon Glenn Trahan here, owner of the TRW family of companies and proud sponsor of the Guadalupe Radio Network.
For 60 years, TRW has helped our clients to optimize the use of their facilities with operable wall products, creating effective, flexible, and acoustically controlled workspaces, making them more productive and successful. And TRW is committed to supporting ministries that also make our community and our world a better place, just like this Guadalupe Radio Network station. You can contact me at trwfamily.com. God bless.
Hi, Julie Carrick here. I am delighted to be the host of We Sing Our Faith. This weekly program shares beautiful Catholic music and deep insights of many Catholic teachings. Join me on Saturday mornings at 9 o'clock Central Time for We Sing Our Faith here on the Guadalupe Radio Network. Saturday mornings at 9 o'clock Central Time, We Sing Our Faith.
Hey, dear listeners, this is Zach Allen, your local general manager, and I wanted to make a quick announcement that one of our generous underwriters, Mr. Ruben Rendon of Rendon & Associates, has been selected by the Mexican consulate in Houston as a consultant to work together on matters related to their constituents. It is an honor and a privilege for Mr. Ruben to support our community in this way. Thank you, Ruben, for all you do, and thank you, dear listeners, for supporting the Guadalupe Radio Network. Find out more at RubenRendon.com. That's RubenRendon.com.
Welcome back to Catholic Lunch Break, the weekly program where we talk about all things Catholic in the greater Houston area. My name is Wyatt Goolsby, executive director of this radio station, KSHJ AM 1430. Last Friday marked another year of a successful Priests versus Seminarians basketball game in Houston. Many thanks to all of my colleagues who helped broadcast the game over the radio and via video on our YouTube page. That includes my colleague David Magianis, who joins us here on the radio. David serves now as the business manager for the Guadalupe Radio Network, and of course he used to be the assistant general manager of KSHJ. So, David, glad to have you back here on the radio. That was such a fun game on Friday, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was a great game, and I think all the attendees really loved that game.
They really did. And, you know, this is the ninth annual Priest for Seminarians basketball game. It's amazing. It's almost been around a decade now. What was your observations of the crowd? Looks like we got a lot of people from across the greater Houston area.
Yeah, it was a great representation of Catholic families with young kids. I saw a lot of young kids there. For some reason, they stood out and I noticed them all around the crowd up in the stands, walking behind us. And so it was great to see families with kids. I saw middle school kids, high school kids. So it's really, I think, reaching so many people in the Archdiocese of Galveston, Houston. It's been going on for 9 years now, and so it's really great to see. When your priest is playing, it's really great to see in the stands all the parishioners sitting together, and they've got the big, what do you call those big?
I guess you call them fat heads. I don't know what you call them.
All right, the fat heads. You see those up in the in the stands. And so, man, we love our priests. We also love our seminarians. I saw some signs for some of the seminarians as well.
That's right. We are absolutely blessed here in the greater Houston area to have St. Mary's Seminary. And so, of course, we have, you know, not only local seminarians from the greater Houston area, but also some seminarians who study here in Houston from across different places in Texas, including, for example, the Diocese of Austin. I think one of the seminarians who played, a transitional deacon, Brian McNaughton, for example, is from Austin. So
right.
We bring in a lot of different people. And David, you raise a good point, which is that it's such a vibrant community having different families come from all across the greater Houston area. They bring their kids, they bring, you know, posters and signs for their priests, and they really cheer them on. So it's a lot of fun, a lot of excitement, and it's been growing over the years. So I want to give credit to Father Richard McNeely, because I would be remiss if we didn't mention him. He is the vocations director for the Archdiocese of Galveston, Houston, and he works so hard along with those other priests who helped to organize it. Remind me, David, who was the original priest who helped kind of get this game going?
So Father Preston and Father TJ had a conversation back in the year 2016, and that's kind of what I learned. I did a quick interview with Father Preston, and that's the one thing I learned is this started back in 2016. It was led by those two, and then they didn't have a big committee. They didn't have a big staff to get this started, so it was really amazing that those two priests, and then other priests joined in, the seminarians joined in, and now it's grown into this nice big ninth annual pre-seminarians basketball game at Rice University. Wow.
Yeah, it is pretty incredible. Yeah, so shout out to Father Preston Quintella, Father TJ Dolce. And you had mentioned that you had talked with Father Preston. David, you did an extensive interview with Father Preston about the history of this priest versus seminarian basketball game, and we partnered with UST Max Studios. So I want to give credit to Darnell Miller and everybody at the University of St. Thomas, who we partnered with not only for the broadcast that evening, but for helping produce that interview. David, my understanding is that we were putting that interview, what, on our GRN YouTube page, so people want to watch it?
Correct, correct. And just as, you know, so there's two things happening, right? So we've got our audio, our radio broadcast, but then also we also had the video live stream going on. And so before the game, I saw the UST team just interviewing everybody that they could. And what they did is they took those clips and played them on the YouTube channel and kind of throughout the game. And so it was really, I think we've taken this to a next level of our production, of giving good quality, you know, on air and live stream, you know, broadcast of the game. It was fantastic.
Like, it feels like we are getting better every year with this, David. You're right. It's hard, and as I say, give credit to you, to Tim Mott, to everybody who worked on this. Again, UST Max Studios, because, like you said, we're doing the radio broadcast, so we broadcast over the radio last Friday night, but then we're always trying to improve that video quality and the video production on the YouTube page. The good part is that some of these clips that we did, the full broadcasts, are still on our YouTube page, our GRN online. I know we had people who were looking at the video from last year as well, the eighth annual, and they're able to watch it and go back this year. So it's very exciting how we're continuing to improve. And you're right, I love how we're partnering with UST Max Studios so we can get some of those interviews on during halftime. I was watching the feed too. It was definitely a lot of fun. I want to give you credit, David. Give shout out to the guy that you worked with, Deacon Patrick, there for the play-by-play.
Yeah, great guy. He loves doing this, and so he's always looking for my invitation sometime in March to join the team again.
Yeah, very good. And of course, I've seen Deacon Patrick Kinnick at some of the Knights of Columbus events as well, so I know he's very active in the Catholic community in here in Houston. So again, my thanks to you, David. Thanks to everybody who helped, our volunteers, Anna and Carol, everybody who helped produce the Priest vs. Seminarians basketball game. Again, if you want to see all that, log on to our YouTube page for the video version at GRN Online. You put that in, search for GRN Online. So again, my thanks to David Magianis. I want to thank everyone also who helped produce this program today, Catholic Lunch Break. That includes Tim Mott, Zach Allen, David Magianis, Jax Morris. We appreciate all of you for listening and for your support of the Guadalupe Radio Network. For all of us, my name is Wyatt Goolsbee. Thank you for listening. And until next time, stay Catholic, Houston.